are these firearm owners and why are they joining clubs at such a high rate? Hack's Alex Mann went out to Queensland's biggest shooting club to meet its new members.
For the newest shooters, the excitement of firing a gun is still fresh.
Well, it's a little bit of adrenaline, I think.
It's exciting, big bangs, yeah, it's good.
You know, it just wakes you up, I suppose. So yeah, it definitely gets the adrenaline pumping.
When I meet these guys at the Belmont Rifle Range, the first thing I notice when walking around is how big the place is. It's massive. You could get lost among the 20 different gun clubs on this huge property in the outer suburbs of Brisbane. And I did, before I found Rod Shannon.
We Fit Your Magazine.
Rod Shannon is the president of the biggest club here, the Brisbane branch of the Sporting Shooters Association of Australia, or the SSAA. And tonight, Rod's teaching a firearm safety course.
This fire, what do you do? This club is probably the largest club in Australia. It's definitely the largest club in Queensland. This club alone has 13,000 members. And there's probably an increase of about 5 to 10% each year.
That's a significant growth rate.
Yeah, well, people enjoy the sport.
Tonight is day two of the course, and inside the club's semi-permanent demountable offices, almost 40 people are crammed into rows of plastic chairs, old fans spinning overhead. Half the people here are in their 20s. Eyes are all forward and fixed on Rod.
Number two there, we mentioned this last night, your firearm is your responsibility.
These are the next wave of SSAA members, and they're a fast-growing group. Across Queensland's clubs, the SSAA reports growing membership of about 5 to 10% per year, and in New South Wales and Victoria, the other two big gun ownership states, the numbers are similar, and the average age is coming down.
I'm Scott Miller, I'm a young Queenslander, learning a bit about shooting and getting into the sport. I think there's a lot of aspects about the sport. I'm a fisherman already, a lot of patience. There's also that whole thing about being Australian. We fish, we ride horses, we shoot. We're very country orientated, very hands-on. Another skill also. As you found here tonight, a lot of people are young. There's a lot of ladies here. There's a lot of guys in business suits that have come after work.
You said there are a lot of ladies. There are about 5 out of 40. I don't know if I would say that's a lot of ladies.
More than I thought.
I think it is definitely, it's getting more of a women's sport, but it's still definitely dominated by males. And I think it's probably the macho of it.
Kimberly works in conservation and is renewing her licence tonight after moving to Queensland from South Australia. In SA, she was shooting feral cats, but these days, it's clay targets.
Once I got a few targets, it was a little bit addictive. I was like, I just want to keep getting more targets. And yeah, I just kind of developed a bit of a passion for it. And I think it's a bit of a challenge and it's something you can challenge yourself.
The city kid, Brett Peterson, pretty cool looking guy with skinny jeans and black rimmed glasses. Hunting's got nothing to do with it, conservation or otherwise.
People will be like, oh, why don't you want to go and shoot an animal? You know, why don't you want to go and harm them? Stuff like that. Well, I don't want to do that. I just want to do target shooting. It seems more funner to me than shooting an animal. It's a perfectly good animal. Just interested in shooting and interested in guns and weapons kind of thing.
Always?
Yeah, computer games would be a background to it all.
No matter what the initial motivation, they're all here tonight for the same reason. And it's why gun club numbers are booming across the country. Last financial year, more guns were imported into Australia than ever before. And apart from supply orders by police, military and security, the rest of those firearms will be purchased by civilian licensed firearm holders. The rules are simple. If you want to own a firearm, you need a license. And if you want a license, you need what's called a genuine reason. It's one of the regulations introduced after the mass shooting at Port Arthur in 1996. Pest control for farmers is a genuine reason, and so is regular competition. But for the city dwellers I'm talking to tonight, the easiest way to satisfy that clause is to join a club. Of the 40-odd students going through the motions tonight, every one of them says they'll be signing on at the SSAA. Despite the swelling ranks of licensed shooters, Rod says he's not worried about any increased risk to the rest of society.
Well, obviously, the more people with firearms, there's always that chance, but I think they're being educated properly. They know the correct ways to use things, and I don't think that the more firearms around the community doesn't correlate that there's more accidents or anything like that with firearms.
And listening to you talking there, it seems like it's part safety, part PR as well. You're telling people about how to talk about shooting and firearms to people once they actually finish the course. Why is that important?
Because you've got to give a good example of what shooting's about. A lot of people have the wrong idea that shooting's a dangerous sport, and that people who have have firearms, must be rednecks or whatever, and this is a good way for people to show others and introduce it to shooting to their friends so they can see that it's not a dangerous sport and it's quite enjoyable.
Scott Miller says he gets where Rod's coming from and sees a serious responsibility in his actions tonight.
I think any knowledge is power. If you notice, sitting in the Rod's very much about you have a duty to the sport and as well to the community for an ethical reason. You know, I think that's good that they really push that, that once you become a shooter, you've got to, you know, uphold a certain impression that the public are going to have of us. Because unfortunately, it is, you know, a lot of people think people that shoot are rednecks.
And that was Queenslander Scott Miller ending that report by Alex Mann. And we got a heap of comments on the Triple J Facebook page today. Linton says, what's there to worry about? About legal gun ownership. I've had my license since the day I turned 18 and shoot in every discipline. It's my sport, my passion and my hobby. Raf isn't worried either. He says, I'd rather that the legal gun culture grow than the illegal one. Sport shooting is a passion for some people, the way that music, art or film may be for others. But Merwin is worried. She says, yes, guns are a menace and people who like to arm themselves more so. Now joining me in the Hack studio is Tim Bannister, spokesperson for the Sporting Shooters Association of Australia. How's it going, Tim?
Yeah, well, thanks, Sophie.
That's good. I've also got a New South Wales Greens member of the Upper House, David Shoebridge, here. How are you, David?
Oh, good, Sophie.
That's good. I'm going to start with you, Tim. Why are the numbers growing across the board, especially amongst young people joining shooters clubs?
Well, I think there's been a generational change since the Port Arthur murders in 96. People now see hunting on the same level as they see fishing, and they see sports shooting as you might see archery. On top of that, the drought is broken, so there's lots of rain, lots of grass and lots of animals, and people are actually asking for assistance, particularly in the agriculture industry, to get rid of non-natives, to get rid of some rogue animals, if you like, whether that's cats, dogs, foxes, goats, camels, the list goes on.
And Tim, tell us, what happened after the Port Arthur massacre in 96? How did that change your industry and your sport?
Well, John Howard, the then PM, had a knee-jerk reaction, if you like. He imposed restrictions on semi-auto firearms, so long arms. But the main thing that happened is that he made it distasteful. He put a general distaste over the sport of shooting and hunting. Now, in reality, we spent over $1 billion, taxpayers spent over $1 billion, which was quite a lot of money in 96, still is. The shooters were given money to go and buy whatever they wanted. Gee whiz, what do shooters buy? They bought more guns.
So you argue that buyback didn't work. Well, look, I'm going to go to David here because he was probably pretty happy with that buyback and with the fact that John Howard made shooting and the sport of shooting quite distasteful and made it more difficult for gun owners in Australia. David, why are you worried about the growing numbers of people owning guns?
Well, I think we should be worried because what we heard in much of that interview before is a growing gun culture. In many ways, a kind of worshipping the gun as though it's some sort of beautiful thing in and of itself. But we need to remember that guns have only one purpose, and that ultimately, they're designed to kill. They're designed to fire a projectile at a lethal speed to kill. And what we have seen since 1996, when we had the buyback and we've had tougher gun laws, we haven't had another massacre. And Tim says it wasn't effective, but we can clearly see since 1996 we haven't had another massacre, and a good part of that reason is we've had tougher gun laws.
A lot of people, though, that have got in touch with us at Hack, a lot of people Alex has spoken to and people have texted in are saying it's got nothing to do with that, that for them it's about sport, it's not about killing.
Well, I think you quite often see this denial from the people involved in the gun industry and some gun owners about the link between the use of guns and killing. And the simple fact is, the more guns we have in circulation, the more opportunity there is for those guns to be used in either domestic homicides or find their way through theft or mischance into the black market. And we're developing a very serious gun culture.
Look, I'm going to go to Susie here. Susie Baloo, are you there, Susie?
Yes, I am. Hello, Sophie.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Now, Susie is an Olympic and a Commonwealth shooter, and she just got back from London, where she came fifth. And Susie, you work as a licensed instructor at a gun club. What kind of people sign up for your How to Shoot class?
Oh, look, I have a variety of people, from lawyers to teachers to mums from private schools. A whole vast majority of people like to come along.
And what do you think of David's arguments that we're developing a culture where people are worshipping guns and thinking that it's cool, and that's not a healthy thing?
Oh, look, I think it's healthy that people actually respect firearms, like they respect powerful cars or aeroplanes. I mean, the more people that are actually aware of how to use a firearm safely, the better that all Australians can be.
And it's okay that guns are seen as something that can be fun?
Oh, look, I have a wonderful time shooting at Olympics and clay target shooting with my friends. I mean, it is an exhilarating sport that I choose as a pastime, and I do very safely. And, you know, you're talking about a lot of young people getting into clay target shooting. It's a real sport. And the thing is that it's one of these sports that you don't have to do 7 days a week training for. You don't have to, you know, join up to a team. You can go and do it in your own time whenever you can fit it in.
Susie, thanks for the call. I'm going to go to Matthew here because, Matthew, you're partially employed to use a firearm. What do you do?
I'm involved in pest control.
Yeah, right. So what do you shoot?
So basically, I'm one of... There's not many of us in Australia, but actually licensed to shoot feral animals in, like, commercial and domestic situations. So unfortunately, there's a massive population of feral animals in Australia, and so someone's got to do the unfortunate task of, you know, carrying out that job, so I'm one of them.
And Matthew, what do you think of the argument that this is concerning the growing number of Australians who are owning guns and doing shooting as a pastime?
Look, as Susie said, the last lady on the radio, I think it's of great importance to have a healthy respect for a firearm, and I'm sure when you're carrying out, getting a licence, doing the test and whatnot, I'm sure there must be some sort of rule and regulation that states that we can't have any idiots out there with, you know, with firearms.
Thanks for the call, Matthew. On that point, I'm going to go to Tim, because, Tim, you would advocate that quite strongly, that you're hoping idiots don't get guns. That is the position of your industry.
We have a no-idiot clause in our membership form. Now, it's actually up to the state police to make sure someone's what they call fit and proper, and they do that quite thoroughly. For instance, if you wanted to get a handgun, it would take you about 2 years. You go on probation, the same as you would, if you like, for your driver's license. Now, Sophie, I want to introduce you to the word of the day. It's called hoplophobia. Hoplophobia means an irrational fear of firearms, an irrational fear of someone owning a firearm. This, unfortunately, is what the Greens are about. Now, I don't understand.
You've diagnosed them, have you?
I'm afraid I have.
You've saved me a bundle, Tim.
Well, let's put this to David.
You're in a privileged position. What are you going to do about the illegal firearms? Not the legal ones, not the ones that I own or other members own. What are you going to do about the drug dealers, the criminals who use firearms? You're a legislator. Please tell us.
Yeah, well, I'll deal with that in two stages. First of all, this idea that just you need a very thorough police check before you get your hands on a weapon. It's not true. In New South Wales, you can walk off the street, go to a gun club, get your hand on a semi-automatic handgun, and you can do it without any police checks. You just sign a form saying that you're a fit and proper person, you don't have any mental health issues, you don't have any police issues. And then there's no external checks. And we've seen tragedies as a result of that. Just 2 years ago, we had a young mentally disturbed woman walk into a gun club, sign the forms, walk out of the gun club with a semi-automatic and kill her father. These laws mean something on the ground. We need tougher gun laws, and it's not true that we have this overarching control.
Tim, what do you think of that point, that it's too easy at the moment?
I know that particular case. She actually stole the firearm. So there's not an awful lot you can do about that.
But no police check, no mental health check. She just walked into the gun club.
She was supervised at the time, but that club wasn't one of our clubs. But
it's the law of Adelaide.
Well, let's put this to you then, David. I mean, the growing gun culture here is a legal gun culture, and isn't that better to encourage that rather than have an illegal culture? Yes, there was that incident you spoke about where someone walked into a club and stole the gun, and there was a horrible tragedy because of that incident. But isn't it better to encourage the legal side of things, as Tim advocates, rather than it go underground and you not be able to keep track of how many firearms we have in the country?
Well, that's a false argument. You don't have to grow the legal pool of guns in order to control the illegal pool of guns. And in fact, fact, the bigger the pool of legal guns out there, the larger the opportunity is for criminals through thefts of people at their home, through thefts of gun shops, through breaking into gun clubs, can get those legal weapons and put them onto the illegal market. The Commonwealth authorities have had a look at this, and they acknowledge, although the information is very imperfect, that one of the principal sources of weapons going into illegal hands and the hands of criminals is weapons that start as legitimate weapons, and there's more and more of them in circulation every day.
We're going to come to that a little bit later. We've got quite a few texts here. Beck grew up in the country and she said, my dad taught me so much respect for guns. I only ever saw him shoot animals that were injured. Guns as a necessity can't be compared with seeking an adrenaline rush by holding a dangerous weapon. And someone else has texted in and said, as a victim of a domestic shooting incident, I strongly advocate the education and respect that sport shooting clubs can provide. And since the introduction of John Howard's gun controls following the Port Arthur massacre, the country's hunters and shooters have waited patiently for the rules to change. 16 years later, the political momentum is beginning to shift. As Alex Mann reports, while club membership numbers continue to swell, the interests of shooters are increasingly finding their way into the political debate.
They're flush with cash and they're not afraid to use it.
Obviously, the more members we have, I guess that gives us a larger national voice, and we certainly use that to promote the shooting sport.
Tim Horan is the media officer for the Sporting Shooters Association of Australia, New South Wales, and his club, like many others, is experiencing a boom, albeit a slow one. It's the biggest club in Australia with 44,000 members in New South Wales and more than 140,000 nationwide, and it's growing by around 5-10% each year. Samantha Lee is a gun control advocate and she says that more members means more political power.
Merely because they have fundings have increased, membership has increased, and particularly in New South Wales with two members in the upper house, that has certainly heightened their ability to negotiate with government.
The SSAA's road to influence is an unlikely one. In 1996, the Howard government made it a requirement for all firearm owners to justify their ownership with what was called a genuine reason for owning a gun.
The reason for that being is that it allows for clubs to help in the regulation of firearms use and to ensure that they're abiding by laws by joining clubs and being licensed.
But Samantha Lee says there's a flip side.
There are some top bodies that have used that membership base to then to sway governments in regards to changing or watering down of firearms laws.
HAC has examined electoral funding disclosure statements in New South Wales and Queensland, which show hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations from shooters' associations to different political parties. In Queensland, where there's no registered shooters' party, the SSAA donated $95,000 to Katter's Australia Party at the end of last year. The party also received support from its now Vice President, Robert Nyer. He's one of the country's biggest importers of firearms and was recently appointed to the Newman government's Weapons Advisory Panel, a panel that's mandate includes looking at ways to cut red tape for gun owners. In New South Wales, the SSAA donated $100,000 to the Shooters and Fishers Party prior to the last election and $300,000 in early 2010. The party holds the balance of power in New South Wales and they've been using it to good effect. This year, Premier Barry O'Farrell opened up the state's parks to recreational hunters in return for their support in selling off the state's remaining power stations. Tim Horan says the SSAA had nothing to do with it.
Although SSAA New South Wales didn't have an active role in those negotiations, we are very supportive of the government's goals to reduce the impact of feral animals in our national parks. As you would know, this same strategy is already proving very effective in state forests, and from our point of view, we believe it's a logical extension of that program.
I mean, it was a decision that was put forward by the Shooters and Fishers Party. Both members of the party are also members of the SSAA, and the SSAA New South Wales branch donated $300,000 to the party. I mean, it seems hard for a casual observer to separate the two entities.
Sure. All I can tell you is when that was announced, we actually learned about it by a press release. So, as I say, we didn't have any active involvement, but we are wholly supportive of the government's goals in doing so.
HAC contacted the Shooters and Fishers Party of New South Wales, but both Upper House MPs Robert Brown and Robert Borsak declined to be interviewed for the program. Instead, I spoke to the party's media officer. Things started politely until I mentioned Samantha Lee's name. She's the gun control advocate that I'd spoken to earlier, and the atmosphere changed dramatically.
Samantha Lee? We don't share a platform with her. because she's wrong.
I put to him that his position was important to respond to other people that we'd spoken to, and the response was this.
You guys are no friends of ours. We sense this was a stitch-up job from the start. Look, mate, just go and play with yourselves in the sandpit.
And then he hung up. Carol Booth is from the Invasive Species Network, and she says that conservation hunting is just a marketing strategy. She also says that the links between the SSAA and the Shooters and Fishers are there, even if they didn't explicitly lobby for the policy.
They're in Parliament because they have the support of the hunting lobby more generally, hunters voting them in. So, yeah, there's definitely links, even if that particular outcome was just a deal between the Shooters and Fishers Party and the New South Wales government.
The Shooters and Fishers Party derives a huge income through donations from shooters' clubs. At the last election, that figure was around $450,000. And as the number of licensed shooters grows, the capacity for their clubs to donate grows too. Tim says it's logical for clubs like his to continue making donations to the party.
Well, the Shooters and Fishers Party have a clear and consistent policy of supporting law-abiding firearm owners while calling for more effective legislation to target criminals with illegal firearms. And that's a message which resonates with our members. So that's why we do support the Shooters and Fishers Party and have done so for several years.
But Samantha Lee is apprehensive. She fears that sporting shooters clubs are getting too powerful and that public safety is at risk.
What we've seen over time is that governments have allowed these really good laws that were the outcome of the Port Arthur massacre to be watered down purely because they want to have political sway and something in their pocket in the day of election time.
That was Samantha Lee speaking there to Hacks, Alex Mann, and in the Hacks studio, I still have the New South Wales Greens member of the Upper House, David Shoebridge, and also Tim Bannister, the spokesperson for the Sporting Shooters Association of Australia. Tim, do you feel like it's a stitch-up?
No. But I must say, the SSAA is not the Shooters and Fishers Party, by the way.
I know. So. But I do want to know, does it feel like you have more pollies on your side than ever before, Tim?
We've got the benefit of hindsight. So after the government spent $1 billion 15 years ago, we actually predicted what would happen, which was not much. So they spent $1 billion. Suicide hasn't dramatically dropped. It was always being reduced slowly. Homicide hasn't dramatically dropped, and the bad guys still have guns. The bad guys, we don't have organised crime in Australia. We have really well organised crime. They don't want an old crusty gun from grandpa's gun safe. They want to buy brand new Glocks from overseas, maybe 200 at a time. They have bought 200 at a time through the Sylvania Waters post office, apparently.
Well, let's put this to David, because you're really worried about the growing influence of the gun lobby in Australia.
Well, you
Why?
Can see it. I see it in the parliament that I'm a member of. I see those two shooters MPs getting concessions out of the government to let hunting into national parks. They want to increase duck hunting. They want to water down restrictions on firearms use. I very rarely, as a Greens MP, have a lot of kind words to say about John Howard, but he spent real political capital doing the right thing and controlling the gun lobby and controlling the number of guns. And unfortunately, in the 15 years since, we've just seen the number of guns increase, and we're basically back to where we were in terms of gun numbers before that massacre.
Well, I'm going to go to Aaron here, because Aaron, you actually are worried about how difficult it is to get a licence.
Yeah, I've had a fair bit of difficulty being able to find places to hunt recreationally that aren't, you know, on my mate's properties. If you're not a member of a gun club and you don't go to, I don't know, one of the registered licensed shooting on in national forest / national parks, you know, events, I guess you could almost call them, then, yeah, I mean, you're kind of restricted to what game is available on the properties that you have a license to shoot on.
So you're looking forward to hunting in national parks?
Well, for vermin control, well, I mean, I hunt for food primarily. And, I mean, if you can make treat hunting the same way you do fishing and have, you know, bag limits, size limits, species that you're allowed to catch and not allowed to catch, then you can make it a sustainable sport the same way that you do as fishing.
Thanks for the call, Aaron. I'm going to go to Darren, because, Darren, you do shoot in state parks. And what benefit do you say your shooting provides?
Well, you've got pest eradication for a start. All the goats, the pigs, the deer, the animals that are eating weeds, transporting those weed seeds over into other areas, other of the forest, and the weeds become, you know, there's massive amounts of blackberry that you see in some of the state forests. And I see it as a service for Forest New South Wales to try and reduce those massive amount of weeds from clogging up the state forest and giving them areas to, you know.
Thanks for the call, Dan. I'm actually going to put this to Tim because, Tim, this is a common claim from shooters' bodies that what they're doing is, you know, for conservation, that they're helping prevent the spread of feral animals. But the Invasive Species Council of Australia has actually come out and said that it doesn't help. They say that the hunting lobby has too much control over feral animal policy and that you guys aren't helping, you're just undermining official control programs of feral animals.
And just to clarify, the Invasive Species Council and Carol Booth are anti-hunting lobbyists. That's actually what they are. They're not some sort of independent game management or environmental management group.
But we also had park rangers come out on the weekend, New South Wales park rangers, and say that they're not in favour of hunters. It was 95% of them. They're worried about public safety as well.
Yeah. What's the difference between a volunteer shooter and a paid shooter? Exactly that, they're paid. Range officers would probably want to look after their jobs. We've been hunting in state forests well before Game Council ever came around. We've been hunting in South Australia, Queensland, Victoria and New South Wales forests for 50 years or more. The reality is we just don't actually have enough money to control all the non-native animals. So, but it is a conservation activity. I'm not sure what David proposes other than crossing your fingers and hoping for the best for state national parks once there are animals in there that you don't want. How else are we meant to protect our native flora and fauna?
Well, we know for a fact, Tim, I'll take you up on that. We know for a fact that ad hoc amateur hunting has no impact at all on feral animal numbers. What it does, it kills something called the doom surplus, that part of the population that's going to die anyhow. And one or two or three rabbits, one or two or three pigs means nothing at all when the breeding levels of these animals means they produce exactly the same numbers following the next season. And in fact, there's an institutional imperative in hunters not to hunt animals out because they want to have a crop for next season's hunt. And we're seeing that across Australia.
I'm going to go to Ben here. Ben, are you there?
Yep.
Ben is from Newcastle. And Ben, you actually want the firearms registry abolished. Why is that?
Just
seeing
basically a waste of funding, to be honest. I mean, New Zealand doesn't have one, Canada's just abolished theirs. I don't see why spend good money every year on a system that doesn't work.
Thanks for the call, Ben. I'm going to go to Edward now. You own lots of firearms. What do you use yours for, Edward?
Yeah, I'd just like to put a view from the rednecks, as a lot of people like to call. I'm on a farm. We've got various stone fruit, and we also run sheep. Our firearms are predominantly used for pest control, but we don't just go out shooting every animal we can. Like, we bait for foxes, we bait for rabbits because they're problems. We don't just shoot them. We try to keep numbers down in more than one way. And also, firearms are not just used for pests. Like, we've got, we run quite a few sheep, and you have a lot of problems with sickness and illness, as you do with any other animal, and a lot of the time, firearms are the most humane way of putting down those animals. If you're affected by a bushfire or something like that, and you've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of stock that are fire affected that need to be put down, and there's no other way around it, the most humane and cost effective way to do that is with firearms.
Edward, thanks very much for your call. I'm going to put this back to Tim. As more people get guns legally, doesn't that increase the chance that guns can be stolen, that guns can get onto the black market, that, you know, as good as your intentions are, that it might not end that well?
Well, you're forgetting that we have porous borders. You're forgetting that we have this thing called customs. If we can get, if drug runners can make $15 billion a year out of selling illegal drugs that are brought into Australia, of course you can bring in illegal guns. Now, 1,000 or 2,000 stolen firearms a year does not make up the 250,000 illegal guns that are already in Australia. It just doesn't work out, does it? How many years would it take?
A lot of years, but we're running out of time, and I want to read Hannah's text message because she says, I do clay target shooting and recreational hunting. I have spinal injuries. It's a sport I can enjoy and be good at despite my low mobility. Thank you to Tim Bannister and New South Wales Greens member David Shoebridge, and all for your calls and texts. We'll catch you guys tomorrow. See ya.